On the line from Tennessee, we have Kim Schaefer, one of our good friends in the UFO community. And Kim, is that Eastern Tennessee or Middle Tennessee?
Eastern Tennessee, Jerry.
Yeah, that's what I started to say, but I thought I'd better ask you first. We've talked in detail in the past about a few things. Welcome to the show again.
Well, thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure to be on with my favorite internet radio broadcaster.
Okay, the check is in the mail. you've got a new website, I think, since last time we talked.
Yes, since the last time you and I talked, I had officially resigned my state directorship with MUFON, and only to find out that the only way I could get on a MUFON would be wearing concrete overshoes. So.
Yeah, John Schuessler was pretty determined to keep you in there, I understand.
Well, let me go.
Well, that's good to be wanted.
I suppose.
So, anyway, I know you formed this new website. Why don't you give it for our radio listeners? We do have a link to it.
It's www.auforc, that's Allfork, I suppose, .com.
What does that stand for?
It's acronym for the Appalachian UFO Research Center. And what we're doing, Jerry, is there were a lot of people in this general area in the southeastern United States that were involved in the UFO phenomenon that did not, for various reasons, belong to MUFON. And these folks, some of which were trained field investigators with MUFON, at some time in the past decided that we needed something here that was localized, if you will, in this area, and wasn't restricted by state lines or so forth like MUFON now is. So we formed this organization to gather these sighting reports from the southeastern United States, and so far it's working out fairly well. You know, the majority of our sightings are still coming out of Tennessee, but, you know, as hopefully as we grow and get a little age on us, you know, things will start happening in other states.
Well, somebody listening in the southeast is probably interested in getting involved, and they can contact you through that website, right?
Absolutely. They can find me through that website, and if they can't find me there, they can always go to the MUFON International website and go to Tennessee. And, of course, they'll find my email address as the Eastern State Director for Tennessee and can get a hold of me that way. And I can redirect them, of course, to the website and to everything that's pertinent to Appalachian UFO Research Center.
You know, I noticed this November, television stations around the country, since it's ratings month, we're doing UFO shows, and I believe WSM did a show on you, didn't they?
WSMV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, a reporter came up here on his day off.
Oh, he was on his day off and did it.
On his day off to get this story. And he put together quite a nice little production for, you know, for what it was. Usually a network affiliate. Which WSMV is a NBC affiliate out of Nashville.
Right, they're a very famous station.
Yeah, actually put together a...
You know, Oprah did news for them at one time. Oprah Winfrey.
I wondered which station she used to work for.
That one.
Well, I doubt that that Tracy Haynes, the reporter, a great guy, open-minded. Like I say, came here on his day off, brought his videographer with him, and they put together a nice little segment that was in no way derogatory toward the UFO phenomenon, which also shocked me.
Well, I know George Knapp out in Las Vegas at Channel 8 out there, and now what was this fellow's name again?
Tracy Haynes.
Yeah, Tracy Haynes, and I believe that's Channel 4, I think, in Nashville. And others are doing more, you know, objective reporting. I think that's good.
Well, you know, with this story, and I know you have ran into this in your career as being in the broadcast Usually, when I see these stories, there's always a catch, if you will, you know, or a side to the story that adds a ridicule to it or pokes fun at it, you know, in some way, shape, or form. In this case, there was nothing, and it was just absolutely a positive story, and you know, I can't give enough praise to Tracy for actually pushing it through on the straight and level like he did.
Well, good. So things are clicking along there in eastern Tennessee, and I got some sightings reports that you filed in the last month that we'll discuss in a little bit. I noticed you took SETI on.
the understatement of the day is frustration. Mr. Seth Shostak, you know, he appeared, and I know you've kept up with the TV shows that were on, especially during the last year that I think Larry King had Mr. Shostak on. He was on the ABC special with Peter Jennings. He was on several on the History Channel and so forth, and I don't think they were actually made last year, but have been made in the recent past. And on each of these programs, Mr. Shostak made it a point to say that he had never seen a UFO video or a photograph or any UFO evidence, if you will, that he couldn't prove was of a terrestrial origin. And he related several good videos to hubcaps being thrown in the air. And it has been on my mind sometimes to write Mr. Shostak, and one night I was sitting here and I had nothing to do, and I went to the SETI website and I found his email address, and I composed a letter to him, and I didn't expect a reply, but anyway, boy, did I get a reply.
Well, basically, in a nutshell, what did he say?
Well, it's really short, but if you'd like to hear it, I'd love to read it to you.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay.
You got it handy there?
It's right in front of me.
Okay.
It says, "Dear Mr. Shaver, thank you for your kind email. I think you misread my position. I have no problem with the hypothesis that Earth is being visited. My problem is with the lack, or total lack, of evidence, or the evidence that is being presented." He has the "is" in asterisk. "I have looked at lots of footage of UFOs and have never seen anything that couldn't be explained as something terrestrial. If, on the other hand, you have convincing evidence to the contrary, I would be perfectly pleased to view it. Frankly, you should write up the best evidence you have, not hundreds of ambiguous reports as you have now. They are not useful. And submit it to a referee journal. That's the way of science, and that is the approach which will garner attention with research institutions and academia. Prose about what we might not know and the finiteness of our comprehension of the universe are simply hand-waving exercises that are arguments for ignorance. Just one good case would convince folks, just like the one giant squid pulled from the deep settled that argument. Here's Seth Shostak."
Well, so what's your thinking on that?
Well, my answer to him was you know, when you receive something like that, you know, you become I don't know, you decide that even this gentleman's mind is something that you know, that I don't think evidence would change this gentleman's mind. And my thinking behind that is the fact that we see this gentleman in the position that he's in. You know, SETI is funded by donations. These donations are from people who otherwise see him and his cohorts, which I like to call, as finest. And how can you be an objective scientist if you disregard all of this data? You know, it's like everyone that's ever reported a UFO sighting is a liar. And Mr. Shostak is the only person sane enough to tell the truth. And it's, anyway, my letter to him initially was the fact that it was something, and as a matter of fact, I don't have a copy of the letter that I initially sent him, but that's so long ago. It dealt with the fact that, you know, they were listening for radio signals. An archaic, it's no better word to use other than archaic, but that's the mode of communication which that is. An extraterrestrial species that has the ability to travel the vast distances of interstellar space is not going to rely on radio. They're going to have another means of communication that, for, you know, it's just something that...
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, you know, we can comprehend their communication devices or their methods of communication, and yet they listen for a radio signal from a civilization that, you know, it travels at light speed. Is it going to ever get here? Is it going to be distorted? Are we going to be able to understand it if we ever receive it? And, in fact, are we ever going to know it if we receive it?
We might be listening to AM when they're sending FM.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
There's in my mind, as a non-scientist, I couldn't justify giving SETI a penny. That argument was one that he did not want to pursue with me. And like I say, you know, I'm sure he's a very intelligent man. I'm sure he's a whole lot smarter than I am. But, I have to question if he and his fellow scientists have any common sense. Because common sense is what guides me through my everyday life. And common sense tells me that E.T. is not going to communicate with a radio.
We got an email from Ann Barnett. And she basically, I'm paraphrasing here, but she says that... his motivation is probably not the same as yours. In other words, he wants to preserve the status quo where he's the expert, regardless of the phenomenon and what the evidence is. And I think she's got a good point there.
Yeah. The fact remains, you can go to SETI's website. The very first thing you go to on the About Us link is their mission statement. The mission of SETI Institute is to explore, understand, and explain the origin, nature, and prevalence of life in the universe. If they disregard the data that proves that we're being visited by an extraterrestrial intelligence, then their mission statement is moot. It's meaningless because they disregard this data. And like I say, you know, there's no way that every person who's ever witnessed a UFO sighting is mistaken. There is a phenomenon, and you know, I couldn't even get him to agree to that, the fact that a phenomenon exists. It's just, more or less in his mind, everybody else is wrong, and Mr. Shostak is right. And very unfortunate, you know, just, I wish I had a little bit of Mr. Allen's money, and, could probably prove the existence of these visitors, shouldn't be on the shadow of any doubt.
Well, maybe somebody listening will write you a check. You never know.
he followed up. I want to give the follow-up email also. This now he expects that we, as ufologists, can prove to him that UFOs exist. His second email to me was, well, Kim, I have to bomb out of here, but I offer this suggestion. What you need is two cameras photographing the same UFO from different angles against the clouds, mountains, or some background. Of course, he wants something that, you know, they can relate the object to. Okay, then all that's required is high school geometry, which together with known frame rates of video will give you the distance and transverse speed. That might convince someone. Otherwise, all you have are ambiguous photos or video. He said incidentally, I suggested this in detail to some fellows in Colorado, spent several hours with them who were convinced they had photographed alien craft with their video cameras. They were not interested in doing experiments. And the onlookers soon realized they didn't want to find out much. So, there you go. You know, it's just...
Well, maybe one of these days, you know, for the security cameras out these days, they might come across a sighting with two different angles. You never know.
Yeah.
And then we'll see. Then we'll see what he says.
Yeah. That's true. But you know, jury, in all honesty, I don't believe that he would accept it as evidence. He's the type of gentleman in my mind that can come up with all these excuses for this video not being legitimate. You know, it has been doctored. It has been, it's a lighting angle. It's something that people would listen to because of his post as, you know, as being what he is. And unfortunately, it carries a lot of weight with a lot of people.
Well, you have some good people agreeing with you, including Larry Dickin, who has a commentary posted on our website about it. Let's talk about some sightings. I know things are happening in November. I've seen some on your website.
Absolutely. Oh, we got a lot of good reports that came in. Well, matter of fact, the best sighting I got, Jerry, happened actually in May of 1999. This lady had contacted me previous to the airing of the news, the interview on the WSMB. This lady lives in central Tennessee, and she's a business lady. She owns a catering business. Evidently, I spoke with this lady on the phone, very well educated, has a couple college degrees, no nonsense lady, career-minded person. Told me about an incident that happened to her on her way home from her work one night. And this brought back shades of last October sighting, close encounter sighting, in which the gentleman that you and I talked about the last time I was on, who was injured.
Yes.
From the close encounter. This was really similar to that case.
Yeah, he had, for listeners who haven't heard that interview, it's still there. They can go listen to it. But he had radiation burns from a triangle.
The gentleman's still having a lot of medical problems that he didn't have prior to this incident. I spoke with him a couple weeks ago. And he's now got tumors all over his body.
Wow.
Inside his body. And he's younger than me, and yeah, I'm not 50 years old yet. So, you know, and this is something that happened suddenly to this gentleman.
So he got a heavy dose of radiation, not just a light burn.
It's very, very strange. But he went for several months. You know, even after you and I had the interview the last time, having beams of light come through his ceiling, and he saw one actually hitting his son in the forehead, and he arrived out of bed, and the light went off. He ran outside with his gun, and the gentleman was terrified. And but as soon as you know, as suddenly as these sightings started, they stopped, and he hasn't had seen anything, any phenomenon whatsoever in the past few months. But still a very exciting, very strange case.
Now let's get back to that 1999 sighting.
Okay. This lady, like I say, she's a business lady, and she just called me out of the blue. She saw Appalachian UFO Research Center's report a sighting link on the internet, and she decided that she would report this. It had been bothering her since 1999 when she had arrived home and told her husband about what had happened to her on the way home that night. She was going home. It had just gotten dark. It was in the middle of May. She was in her van, and that belonged to her company. And she lives in rural Williamson County. For those of you who don't know, it's just south of Nashville. And she rounded a curve, and she saw what she thought was two light planes that were flying awful close together or fixing to crash into each other. And they had white lights on. And so she rounds this curve. Well, these things have stopped in the sky. And she exited her van. And she said it took a few moments for it to register what she was looking at because, you know, for whatever reason, this didn't dawn on her what she was looking at. These things were two Chevron-shaped craft. One was parked inside the other. She said she could see stars between them, but not very many. She could see stars around them. She described them as being wider than a football field is long, and you know, several hundred feet off the ground. Each of them had a white light on each apex, meaning she saw six lights total. She said the objects were flat black, but she could see texture to the objects like they were somewhat ribbed or had some kind of designs or something on them that, you know, she really couldn't remember quite how they were on the craft, but she did remember that there was something particular about the appearance of the skin of these craft. They sat silently in the sky, and she watched for a few seconds and realized what she was looking at. And she made the comment, as a matter of fact, she made the comment when I called her and talked to her about it after. She reported it that she nearly lost control of her bodily functions and jumped back in her van and sped home. And she got home and told her husband about what she had seen. And, you know, he kind of laughed it off. But it was a few days after this that this lady started having problems. She thought she had caught a cold. And now this is not on the website, but anyway, since I talked to her on the phone, I found this out. It's eerily like the October sighting of last year. She said that she thought she was catching a cold, and she was having a real hard time breathing. Her chest was real tight, so she went to her doctor, and the doctor ran a few tests on her, and couldn't really find anything, so she decided to do a blood test, and she called her that evening and asked her about what kind of chemicals she'd been using cleaning. And the lady told me that, you know, she has help that cleans. Her employees clean. She don't clean. And she hadn't touched any kind of cleaning chemicals. Well, there was something in her blood that they really couldn't determine what it was, but the doctor assumed that she had ingested fumes or some type of a cleaning chemical, and it had irritated her bronchial tubes and her lungs and her throat and so forth. They put her on heavy antibiotic therapy, and you know, she was over it in a couple of weeks, but the fact remains, you know, something happened to the lady that night.
So it may be an abduction.
Very possibly. I couldn't get any missing time out of her. She didn't have a watch. There wasn't a clock in her van. She didn't believe she was late getting home. Of course, you know, in most cases like this, people lose time and don't even realize they've lost it. As again, revert back to the October case last year where he lost time.
Yes.
You know, it's just one of these things that, you know, we're gonna have to kind of read between the lines on the possibility exists that something a little more happened to this lady. Anyway, it was a really, really good case to get.
Have you suggested to her a possible abduction?
I brought it up, and she didn't want to talk about it.
Okay.
You know, it's a... She was more or less of a mind that, no, you know, I was not.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's a lot of denial, but, you know, in some of these cases, too, people suspect something more has happened to them and they won't admit it to themselves.
I understand.
Out of fear, most likely.
Right. You know, how far is Fort Loudoun Lake from you?
Fort Loudoun's probably 120 miles from Indian's profile.
Yeah, you know, they had a sighting over there on November 19th. That's interesting.
Yeah, that was really a nice case. this gentleman emailed me and asked that I not contact him. Although he went into detail in about three pages of things that had happened to him that day. Of course, you know, he had two sightings that one day, one that morning and one that evening.
And they were in different locations, right?
Yeah, and both over the lake, though.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I used to live in that area down there below Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
I used to live right near Fort Loudoun Lake, and I can't picture any light aircraft flying out of that lake, or I don't think this gentleman, had mistaken an aircraft or something else for what he described to me. He also went into detail about a case that something had happened to him about 5 years ago.
Yeah, Larry told me that there had been something previous.
Yeah.
What was that?
This gentleman told me that he was delivering paper, and, you know, of course, most of these folks that deliver papers are out before daylight.
Sure.
He was out before daylight in a place called Friendsville. It's real near Maryville, Tennessee, and it's very, very rural. He said he was driving along, and, of course, that time of the morning, the highway that he was on, there's two tractor trailers, and, you know, it's a two-lane road. It's a state highway. He noted in front of him a tractor trailer had slid to a stop because he saw the smoke off the tires. And when he got up to it real close, he could see that the reason the tractor trailer had stopped, there was an object covering in the road in front of it. And anyway, he got out of his car, and this object's moving off through the woods. There's a lot of piney woods down there where it's the second growth stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, people playing a lot of pines and so forth. But this object is hovering through these trees, and it just passed across the road in front of his truck, and this trucker decided to lock his truck up. I would love to talk to that gentleman. But anyway...
Well, maybe that truck driver's listening. You never know.
I hope he is. I would love to hear his version of these events. This object moved off through the woods, and this gentleman exited his vehicle and watched it as it slowly moved, you know, at the tops of the trees, the very small, of course, most of the second growth trees here in that area, you know, 16, 18 feet tall. And this object is brushing the top of the trees, and it's moving across in front of the truck and off through the woods. And all this time, this gentleman's sitting here watching it. Well, the truck driver evidently is really mad that this object stopped him, so he hightails it on out. And this gentleman doesn't get a chance to do anything other than to watch the object leave. There's evidently a lot more to that.
Uh-huh.
Love to hear it.
Well, maybe somebody will come forward. You know, truck drivers, they see a lot of things.
I get a lot of reports, Jerry, from truckers.
Yeah.
I really do. I got a good triangle report. Back in November. Well, this is November. It's back the 1st of November.
Yeah, Hamblin County.
Yeah. This gentleman called me, and he said he wasn't going to call, and he decided that, you know, maybe he should report it in case someone else had seen it. But, you know, he noted seeing these triangular areas, and it didn't have lights. And I remember that night because I was outside for a little bit of it. It was kind of chilly here, but... of evenings when there's nothing going on and put on TV, well, we like to take the camera and the binoculars and go out.
Yeah, I know. We've talked about that. You do your own sky watching.
Absolutely. As I remember that night, it was extremely clear. And this gentleman noted that he saw these areas ahead of him that were void of stars. They appeared to be moving. And so when he gets his truck off to the interstate where he can exit the truck and cut his lights off, well, he sees these two triangular areas moving slowly west, and he watched them for a while, and he could see the stars disappearing to their front and reappearing to their rear, and one was in front of the other. You know, I wish these people would carry cameras with them.
Yeah.
It's sadly ironic that they don't. There's two cameras for Mr. Schultz.
Yeah, right. You'd have to have them mounted on each side of the truck, I guess.
Exactly.
Maybe on one end and the other for it, so we can get his geometric settings. So anyway, this was a black two triangles, and they blacked out the sky, and they moved very slowly. And, you know, we get lots of reports from your area. I know you do, about triangles.
There's a lot of triangle activity here, and there's probably more than ordinary,
uh-huh.
I guess. But you know, we have a lot of people here that there's a lot of retired people who just love to sit out in the evenings and enjoy the evenings. We live in a very hilly, rural country setting, and
yeah, at night, I imagine it's pretty clear, really.
Oh yeah, it really is. It's not just because I live here, but it's the best place I've ever been. And goodness, I really don't know. There seems to be though more activity here than in most places. But I like to think that for whatever reason, there's more people here looking at the sky, and I preach that all the time. If you want to see a UFO, you got to look up. And people plainly do not look at the sky that night. And I think that's a reason. Well, in a lot of metropolitan areas, you know, there's light, and you really can't see the sky anyway. But in areas of the country like this, and I'm sure where you live also, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to look up if people would just do it. And it's unfortunate that they don't.
Well, Kim, our time's almost up. We need to wrap it up. You got anything, a big closer for us?
Wish I did.
Basically, I guess we could plug the website again.
Well, yeah, www.aqforc.com.
And you have an email address there. They can report. And you are always looking for volunteers.
Absolutely.
Tennessee volunteers.
Well, it could be. We don't have a membership fee. There's no set of parameters that say if you can join our organization or not. At some point, we're going to file a 501c and get a nonprofit organization stamp of approval put upon us so we can proceed with this thing. But for now, you know, with the very few members we have at this time, there's really not any sense in going to any extremes. But hopefully this thing will grow and we can get the southeast of the United States covered. I'd like to have people from every state in the southeast to join and have them to test to become qualified field investigators and get involved in this phenomenon and let's solve this thing in our lifetimes.
Well, Kim Schaefer, you keep it up and keep in contact with the media. You're making some progress there.
Very good progress, I hope.
Yes, and we will stay in touch.
Jerry, thank you. It's always a pleasure, and hope to do it again soon.
Well, we will, and you have a nice holiday.
You too, my friend.
Okay, talk to you later.